You don't have to hate yourself for enjoying it.
There's a lot of controversy about Alfred Hitchcock's treatment of his leading ladies, and there are two books that are the primary sources. For the prosecution is Donald Spotto's Spellbound by Beauty, Alfred Hitchcock and His Leading Ladies, published by Hutchinson in London, and the other is Alfred Hitchcock, A Life in Darkness and Light by Patrick McGilligan, for the defense, published by HarperCollins. Whichever side you fall on, each side of the case is treated with a lot of detail, and that we'll just leave, which will leave it up to the reader to make up their mind. The book we're looking at today is a monograph on Hitchcock's Shadow of a Doubt by Diane Negra, with Matthew of KBOO's Gremlin Time and Professor Lisa Neville of Cortland University in New York State. And we will be back next week with another Film at 11.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Could I get two of those zucchini, please?
Sure. Anything else for you today?
What is that over in the basket?
Oh, honey, that is the organic, homegrown More Talk Radio with Cecile Prescott and Celeste Carey.
Wow, I'll take one.
It is so great. Every Monday at 8 in the morning.
How do I get more?
Well, you can support programs like this with donations by going to kboo.fm/give or texting KBOO to 44321. It is the Fresh Off the Vine Fall Fun Drive, so it's a great time to give.
More Talk Radio sounds nutritious. I can't wait to try it.
Oh, honey, you're gonna love it.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
Connect with your favorite community radio station on social media.
Our Facebook page is facebook.com/kboomradio.
And follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/kboo.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/kboo radio.
We also provide content to the free music archive.
An interactive library of high-quality legal audio downloads.
That's at freemusicarchive.org/curator/kboo.
You can find all of this and more on the KBOO website, kboo.fm.
Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Out of the Streets of Portland, a podcast focused on sharing the stories of people who are currently or formerly homeless in our community and helping navigate the systems and services that the Joint Office of Homeless Services and its partners either have in place or continue to develop to help people move out of homelessness and back into stable, supportive housing. Today on Out of the Streets of Portland, we're going to take a look at the village model for shelter and how communities and neighborhoods in Portland have come together to support unhoused neighbors in their area. We'll speak with Caleb and Matt, who responded to the news of a homeless shelter opening next door by holding a community potluck for the neighborhood, welcoming existing neighbors and shelter residents alike. That initial meet and greet turned into the formation of Cultivate Initiatives, which has become one of the most dynamic homeless services organizations in East Portland. We'll also speak with Kara, who heads up Beacon Village. That village is a 10-unit transitional shelter formed on a church parking lot in Northeast Portland at the height of the pandemic. But first, we're going to start this episode of the podcast with a segment called Busting a Myth. Today's myth is that the only type of shelter available in Portland is dorm-style congregate shelter. In fact, the majority of the 25 local shelters funded by the Joint Office of Homeless Services are not congregate shelters. Some are village-style shelters with individual sleeping pods and community spaces, while others are motel shelters, providing rooms for families, people fleeing domestic violence, and people who are medically vulnerable. Since its launch in 2016, the Joint Office of Homeless Services has increased the number of shelter beds available in the city from 800 in 2016 to over 2,000 in 2023. Our funded shelters are reservation-based, open 24/7, and welcome partners, pets, and personal belongings. They offer meals and some have full kitchens, as well as laundry access, showers, and case management and housing navigation services. You can find more information about our shelter system, including a map of locations, at our new website, johs.us. In this episode of Out of the Streets of Portland, we'll start with the story of Cultivate Initiatives, an organization that began in 2018 when a new shelter for veterans experiencing homelessness was announced to be moving to the Mill Park neighborhood. While some neighbors protested with signs, others organized with the neighborhood to create an eat and greet event to welcome the shelter residents as neighbors. This community engagement brought together a group of housed and unhoused neighbors determined to make spaces of community, safety, and belonging for all. Caleb and Matt were part of this effort and are now staff members at Cultivate Initiatives.
It was 6:30 in the morning on a summer day, and walking out into the backyard with a cup of coffee, and I wasn't even awake yet, and you know, seeing someone kind of slouched over in the backyard, and you know, my instant reaction was, "Whoa, what are you doing here?" And then being able to literally turn around, drink some coffee, and reevaluate, okay, how can I respond versus react? And so I went to the neighbor that was kind of slouched over and looked at a tree and said, "Interesting tree, isn't it?" And the neighbor kind of came to and was like, yeah, it is. It is an interesting tree. And from there, got to know that he was looking for the YE shelter, and was an elderly gentleman that got dropped off, you know, late at night from a taxi, didn't know where the shelter exactly was, and ended up, you know, in a backyard. I asked him, "Hey, let's go figure out what's next. In the meantime, could we, you know, come to the side yard and we can drink coffee and figure out what's next?" It's funny, after the side yard, I, you know, told him where the YE shelter was, and I go back and do my thing, and about a half an hour later, I come back out, and the gentleman is a block down the road, but in the wrong direction. And at that point, I was like, "Hey, I'll come and walk you over to the YE shelter." And so, kind of arm in arm, we slowly walked to YE shelter, and then that really was the catalyst of continuing to be with our neighbors and have a posture of being for and with them, and getting to hear the hopes and the fears and the stories of, you know, what they've experienced. Cultivate Initiatives was born out of a group of people asking what would it look like for a neighborhood to embrace a shelter as neighbors versus rejection. And so I was renting a basement in the Mill Park neighborhood, and a new shelter moved in, and there was quite a bit of controversy, and to see so many people come together to be against and reject new neighbors moving into the neighborhood really bumped a group of people out and asked what would it look like for a neighborhood to embrace a shelter as neighbors, and ideally that narrative would inviting your new neighbors over to get to know them. And so in the midst of the status quo of rejection or avoidance, we said, what if we welcomed our new neighbors and had a barbecue and got to interact with them as humans? And that first year, 2018, we had a parking lot eat and greet with our YE shelter neighbors, and had it in Plaza 122 that's owned by the neighborhood. And to see neighbors come together in a parking lot and listen to music and drink coffee really transcended the barriers and rejection that is often common, and really dismantling the fears that often can seep in if we're not intentional about getting to know our neighbors. From there, we volunteered operating a severe weather shelter in the winter of 2021, and 2 days into it, it was just volunteering, and then Mark Jolin with the joint office said, hey, can you keep operating it and we'll compensate you when it's over. And I think it was like 5 days of severe weather and being able to see the skills and talents that many of our neighbors that have been on the streets, that they might have not used those skills and talents for a year or decade plus, and yet there's so much skills that are untapped. And so that was the catalyst of, hey, let's not only come together and eat, but let's also come together and work and sweat and be able to cultivate community, both figurative and literally.
One of our staff members who, she started through supportive employment and is now peer support specialist, still employed with us, but not necessarily part of the, supportive employment aspect as much anymore. Is in housing and everything now, like has really made a whole transition. One of the things that she first said was, like, here at Cultivate, nobody, people don't hide their keys or move their phone away when they sit by you, even if it's somebody you've met before. And I think that, or like, yeah, you're new. Yeah, can you drive the truck? Obviously within driver's license and all those things you have to have, but it's not like you have to prove yourself for 6 months or a year and then we'll trust you. It's like, we're gonna start with the aspect, with the posture of trust, and that has huge outcomes, both in the heart and soul, but also in just tangible outcomes as well. Whatever, the service or the program or, whatever that is, at the end of the day, it's provided in a way that allows people to experience that self-worth. So then, yeah, you have the people who are saying it, and you also have the experience. And then just one other thing, because it just really hit me hard, of like, he was mentioning Bobby, who was on the Mill Park Neighborhood Association Board, who used to be a YE's neighbor, and I think if you ask Bobby, he would definitely say, yes, shelter, yes, housing, workforce, all these services, but that's not really what he talks about. When you ask him about what was critical, he talks about a couple people who stuck by his side and didn't give up. And I think that's something that can transcend whatever the program is, Not to downplay how important those are, because they are so important to have housing. Definitely we're all on board with housing first and everything, but that's like where it starts, not where it ends.
We don't need to be everything to everyone everywhere, because there's a lot of other great groups of people and organizations that are helping people with addiction and recovery. And so being able to come alongside and not do it ourselves, but come alongside our neighbors and say, hey, here's, mm-hmm. here's an organization, here's a meeting that happens every Monday night, two blocks from here, like, let's go with you and experience that together. And so being able to find the things that connect people versus disconnect people.
The reason we wanted to do the village was, one, we believe in the village model. We've seen it be successful, and because it was in our neighborhood. 122nd and Burnside is, you know, it's our area, and so we're like, we definitely want to be involved and engaged in this. And so started working with the City of Portland's SRV team through Commissioner Ryan's office and the Joint Office of Homeless Services. And, you know, it was a little bit of a long road to get there of just, you know, things always take a little longer than you think they will. But it's really been a joy. It's both just as an organization, we've been unable to have a lot of our staff who started maybe on the beautification team or doing intern program transition into working over at the village now. It's been a really great, you know, connection to have an actual option for shelter for people. We've also definitely seen the community be supportive of what's going on over there. And it's the exciting part for us is that we're still somewhat in the beginning. You know, it's only been about 6 months. It's a big village. We've got 49 people living there at all times, wraparound services. We got health services going over there. We have nursing students who are there from our nursing student partnership through our mobile health services program. One thing we're really passionate about too is that it's not, you know, similar to what we were talking about with housing. It's not simply a place of shelter, but it's also a place of community and belonging, and that there are, you know, opportunities for, I think it's twice now we've done jam sessions where this group called Free Music comes on Saturdays and brings a bunch of instruments. And, you know, there was a guy who, to be frank, it's been a difficult situation with one of the villagers who has just had some issues with living in village life and making that transition from coming off the streets into the shelter. And what got him out of the unit, out of his tiny home, and into community was the music. And nothing had worked before that, you know? So finding those creative ways to bring people out of their units and into community, and also just, I mean, the shelter itself is awesome and the village model is great. So it's been a good experience. I don't think if any of us look out and see people having to live on the streets and are like, oh, that's okay, that's not a great reaction. But to not have that anger be at the people who are experiencing that, but to use those feelings for something positive. And I think there are so many creative ways to do that, and it's going to look different for every person and in every part of the city because we have different places.
That was Caleb and Matt from Cultivate Initiatives in East Portland. Next, we'll hear from Kara, the manager of Beacon Village, which is a small community in Northeast Portland that provides homes for 10 residents in individual sleeping pods. Constructed in 2020, Beacon Village features a handmade shower and laundry tailor from Cascadia Clusters and a cozy indoor community kitchen, dining room, private meeting rooms, and fellowship hall in the basement of Bridgeport United Church of Christ.
The neighbors were had a lot of pushback. We had a couple of town hall meetings. Those conversations were very difficult to navigate because there was so much fear and trauma in Portland and Multnomah County at that point. And over time, it got a lot better. When we opened and I got there, I decided to make it more of a something that would increase the property value of the neighbors. And so our plan now is to have the most beautiful block in Mama Villa. So we go and take care of neighbors' yards. We approach shut-ins and help and ask if there's anything we can do for them. We have a native species program on the lot. Our villagers are engaged in in gardening, and so that is helpful. They have been getting a lot of therapeutic. There's a lot of therapeutic value in tending to plants. And so I think through, by focusing on working with neighbors on us being part of the healing of Multnomah County, not just healing the people that are in the village, but we've all been traumatized. And so by them being part of this healing, we can also be part of their healing. And so how do we believe that? So what I heard a lot of is from the house people, those people don't understand. Those people are X, Y, and Z. And what I heard from the unhoused population was those people don't understand and they're the problem. And so I have taken it that very to heart and have worked hard to mend those two so that there are no barriers, that we are going to be working together and healing each other.
So do you have like an ongoing dialogue with the neighborhood and the residents of Beacon Village?
I do. So after we kind of got the initial operations down, I was finally able to start meeting one-on-ones with neighbors and getting to know them and listening to their fears firsthand over coffee and getting to know them, how long they've lived there, what would they like to see, what are their concerns. I have given them my number to call if there are any problems that they have that are off-site of our village. So if there's, I get calls sometimes on the weekend that says, there was a disturbance on the corner of, these streets, and do you know what's going on? I said, I don't know, but I will figure that out and, see what we can do about that. Or if tents sprout up, we make sure that we approach those folks immediately, make sure their needs are met, and make sure that we have a map of kind of who is in that area. And the neighbors really appreciate that kind of cohesive, collaborative approach to having a village. They say to me, we never thought it would go this well. We are so glad you are here. We're proud that we support this. We didn't know how to help and we were afraid to help, and now we realize all we needed to do was just let you be, and we're really happy. And so that's not all the neighbors. There are some neighbors I haven't spoken to, but the ones that I have, about five of them at this point, are very happy and have been making donations and dropping by to say hi. And so the next step will be for them to get some training, some education on site about generational poverty, homelessness, addiction, trauma-informed care, de-escalation, really giving neighbors the tools to be even more proactive in their neighborhood.
And as far as the integration, you talked about some help. Is that the Beacon Village residents volunteer to help the neighbors, or they go do they get, is that a job that they go and do gardening for people or get support?
So that is aspirational. So right now we have something called a block walk. And that is where a staff person and a villager go around with little trash grabbers and have their Beacon Village shirts on, walk around the neighborhoods and pick up garbage and say hello to neighbors. I think that the next phase of this integration program will be to get more engaged with neighbors. And I'm already seeing relationships building between villagers and neighbors. So I think it's already working. I think I just want to build on it more. So For instance, this fall we will be having a bulb planting party. So we'll be going around to our neighbors. One of our neighbors donated $100 worth of bulbs. And so we'll be planting those in neighbors' yards. We're gonna walk around with a wagon and be like, do you want some bulbs? Do you want some bulbs? And this idea is sort of to demonstrate the concept of us working together to create an environment that is healthy to grow. Because it's all of our responsibility to create an environment where all of us can thrive. And then we wait, because it takes time. You can't just put a bulb in the ground and expect for it to bloom the next day. It takes time. There are seasons of growth. And then sometimes when you plant something, you don't get to see it bloom. But you're planting it for someone else. And then you let go. And then you wait. And hopefully, as the winter, the dark days of winter are upon us, neighbors and villagers and staff will all walk by those places where they planted those bulbs. And we'll all have an anticipation of being able to see something bloom. There is no formula. There is no Gantt chart that you can put on a person. We're messy, and we go through ebbs and flows, and there are times of stagnation, and those are really important times too. We help them with their goals so they get to set the goals. Do they want housing? Do they just want a better car to live in? Do they want to just take care of their criminal background or address that? Do they want to get a job? Do they want to get their kids back? Those are all good goals. And so our goal is not to house every person that comes in. If they want housing, we will definitely try to get them housing. As you know, there are a lot of challenges with housing in Portland, and it's a very complex landscape that takes a lot to navigate. But we definitely do help them to navigate that and help them to advocate for themselves. I will also say that no one knows community better than the folks on the street. They do community better than we do as house folks. It's not that we need to teach them how to have community. It's that we need to help them to integrate into a way that is going to be more conducive with their success among the house population and in the greater population. I am in recovery. I've got 16 years recovering from heroin, and I was on the streets for 4 years. I am only here because of Outside In, which helped me to not get sick while I was using needles. Central City Concern, which let me into detox 14 times. Fora Health, which let me into treatment a couple of times. All the treatment centers, I went to, I don't know, 9. Sometimes we don't see, if you were to see me when I was on the street, I was stealing out of the tip jar of Starbucks. I was begging for money. I did not look anything like I do now. All I had to my name was a backpack. And here I am with a degree, 16 years sober, and I'm working with folks that have recently experienced the same thing. They have so much to add. They're recovering from so much trauma before they were homeless, but homelessness in itself creates its own trauma to overcome.
That was Kara from Beacon Village in Northeast Portland. It's one of a dozen alternative village-style shelters funded and supported by the Joint Office of Homeless Services throughout the Portland area. Thank you. thank you for joining us in this episode of Out of the Streets of Portland, a podcast produced by the Joint Office of Homeless Services, a Multnomah County department with funding from the county, the city of Portland, metro, and state and federal governments to house, shelter, and provide street outreach, navigation, employment assistance, assistance obtaining Social Security income, and case management to people experiencing homelessness in our community. Please subscribe to our podcast to get notified every time a new episode is posted. You can find this podcast, along with a ton of information, data, and reports, at our website, johs.us. Thanks again for listening to Out of the Streets of Portland.
Did you know that KBOO is streaming live on the web? Well, you do now. Just type www.kboo.fm, click on Listen Live, and you've got us. Just another example of how KBOO 90.7 FM Portland works for you. It's your community radio.
Howdy, everybody. I'm Rose Maddox, and I'd like to tell you that you're listening to KBOO in Portland, Oregon, the station that I listen to when I'm in the area.
This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.